Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to welcome you to a really exciting, wonderful session entitled Intellectual Exchanges, Gender, Identity, and Embodiment Before, During, and After the Dreyfus Affair. I am Rachel Fuchs, now Professor Emerita of Arizona State University, and chairing the session and delighted to do so. Our first panelist will be Jean Pedersen. Jean is Associate Professor of History at the Eastman School of Music at the University of Rochester. She has a monograph called Legislating the French Family, Feminism, Theater, and Republican Politics, 1870 to 1920, that came out from Rutgers University Press. She has numerous edited collections, peer-reviewed articles, invited essays, and I call your attention to a special issue of Historical Reflections, Réflexions Historiques, in spring 2014 that she edited. She has a review article on feminisms, which appeared in about, I think, 2014 in French Historical Studies. And if that wasn't enough, in 2014, she has another article, Speaking Together Openly, Honestly, and Profoundly, Men and Women as Public Intellectuals in France in the 20th Century, which appeared in a special forum on women in learned cultures in the journal Gender and History. She's currently working on Men and Women as Public Intellectuals in France. Her almost completed book manuscript bears the tentative title of The Union for Truth, Intellectuals, Educators, and Activists of the French Third Republic. Her paper today is Maxims to Keep the Current Crisis. Maxims to Keep in the Current Crisis, Gender, Politics, and Pedagogy During the Dreyfus Affair. Jean?
Thank you, Rachel, for that very generous introduction, and thank you all of you for coming this afternoon to our panel. On February 1st, 1899, French philosopher and literary scholar Paul Desjardins intervened in the debates over the Dreyfus Affair by publishing a list of 25 maxims to keep in the current crisis in the Bulletin of the Union for Moral Action, the group that he had founded in 1892 in an attempt to unify French men and women across the lines that already separated them by sex, class, and religion before the Dreyfus Affair began. Shortly after Desjardins shared his Dreyfusard political recommendations with the liberal intellectuals of the Union, Protestant philanthropist and French Alsatian educator Emma Wüst distributed the maxims to the additional network of Republican instituteurs and institutrices who subscribed to Pour nos enfants, the monthly pedagogical journal that she had founded in 1897 to spread the Union's message beyond its immediate adult membership to a larger mixed audience that included parents, teachers, school children, and adolescents. 4 months after distributing Desjardins' maxims, Wüst intervened in the national debate surrounding the Dreyfus Affair in a different way in May 1899, when she encouraged the readers of Pour nos enfants to support the embattled French Republic by contributing to the journal's newest column, Action Française, French Actions, Actions with a very important S. For those of you who are more used to associating the phrase Action Française in the singular with the anti-Dreyfusard political organization that modern scholars have identified with royalism, reaction, proto-fascism, and outright fascism, let me take a moment to emphasize here that Wüst's new column on Action Française in the plural used its similar-sounding name to develop a completely different political position. Where the Action Française singular consistently defined French identity in terms of anti-Semitism and anti-Protestantism, for example, Wüst introduced her new column on Action Française in the plural by highlighting the key distinction between a positive patriotism that accepted strangers and a negative chauvinism that did not. While many historians have already analyzed the work of Desjardins and his Union for Moral Action as a way of exploring the French intellectual networks of the fin de siècle and the Belle Époque, Very few of them have paid as much attention to the union's women as the union's men. And none of them have gone beyond the union's bulletin to look at Wüst's Pour nos enfants for our children as well. My paper focuses on the union's activities in the key period from 1897 to 1900 to compare the ways in which its male and female members responded to the Dreyfus Affair. While histories of French intellectuals have typically focused on men such as Desjardins, I think we can gain some important new insights into the nature of French intellectual life and Republican political culture if we also look at women such as Wüst. So as I am sure you all already know, the Dreyfus Affair opened with Alfred Dreyfus' arrest and false conviction for espionage in 1894, divided French public opinion with special intensity over the question of his guilt or innocence during a series of sensational trials, mistrials, and retrials in 1898 and 1899, and closed with Dreyfus' final exoneration and rehabilitation by the Cour de Cassation in 1906. Like individual families, university faculties, literary salons, and other formal and informal institutions across France, union members split over the merits of the affair as soon as they began to discuss them in the pages of the union's bulletin in 1897. While journalist Maurice Pugeot and philosopher Henri Vaugeois left the union to found the anti-Dreyfusard Action Française in the singular, for example, figures such as sociologist Émile Durkheim and philosopher Gabriel Segal stayed with the union and participated in the foundation of the pro-Dreyfusard League des Droits de l'Homme. Despite Pugeot and Vaugeois' dramatic departure, the majority of the union's members stayed together and moved firmly to the Dreyfusard side. By 1899, one union member publicly hailed two especially prominent union Dreyfusard, microbiologist Émile Duclos and historian Gabriel Monod, as the living conscience of the nation. 2 weeks after Edward Drumont started raising money for the Henri subscription that we will all be hearing about in Elizabeth Everton's paper today, the Union's Bulletin took up the Dreyfusard cause in an especially visible way when it published a list of 25 maxims to keep in the current crisis. This is a piece that Bulletin readers apparently appreciated so much and requested so often that the union's leaders added an extra budget line to print new copies by popular demand and urged union members to distribute the resulting pamphlet as widely as possible. While the list appeared anonymously, everything about its content and location suggests that it was the work of union founder Paul Desjardins himself. While the Maxims did not explicitly claim that Dreyfus was innocent, their Dreyfusard sympathies were clear from the content and tone of their 25 articles. And union readers responded to the list as a clear statement of Dreyfusard ideals. Article 1, for example, encouraged readers to feel all the wrongs, illegalities, and iniquities that are committed in the state as if they wounded them personally and to pursue their reparation. Article 3 urged readers to go beyond the simple acceptance of legal truth by seeking a truth of fact, a truth of appreciation, and an ideal equitable truth that would result from solid evidence and its unbiased analysis. Article 25, the last on the list, urged readers not only to work to redress an individual error committed, but also to extend their intervention to, quote, the correction of the imperfect institutions that made this error possible and prevented its reparation for a long time. While reading the Union Bulletin's special issues and major articles about the Dreyfus Affair might make it seem as if union men were the only ones who had something to say about the crucial political questions that were dividing the nation, however, union women's eager interest in the affair, their participation in the Dreyfusard movement, and their contributions to its associated networks are all apparent in other places in the Bulletin's pages. When the Union discussed possible responses to the affair at its annual meeting in April 1898, for example, the published minutes show that it was an unnamed directrice d'école normale, the directress of a woman's teacher training school, who spoke about the difficulty of finding good information in the provinces and expressed her desire for a new newspaper that would provide a regular, timely, complete, and impartial summary of contemporary parliamentary debates. This unnamed female educator's frustration at not being able to find a single reliable newspaper that she felt she could reasonably recommend to her students made such an impression on her fellow union members that the memory of her original observations came up again in a new discussion about potential union outreach and publicity projects in the Bulletin's correspondence column over a year later. Union members took a special interest in men and women who worked as instituteurs and institutrices because they saw teachers as one of the keys to reaching new audiences across the country. When J. Aubry heard of the union's ambitious proposal to found a mass circulation newspaper, for example, he wrote in to suggest that they might have an easier time reaching people in rural areas if they worked instead through, quote, the intermediary of the cultivated classes and the school, above all, the school. And when Emma Vust came in for special praise as one of the union's most devoted friends at the union's annual meeting 4 months later, it was because she had actually succeeded in using the pages of her pedagogical journal Pour nos enfants to distribute the union's message to several thousand additional male and female teachers. Emma Vust had founded Pour nos enfants in 1897 as a way to spread what union members called the spirit of the union to a combination of new rural and urban audiences that she described as the inhabitants of isolated farms, populous faubourgs, and elegant quartiers. She imagined that teachers would read it to their students in primary and secondary schools across the country. She hoped that students would share it with their families and that parents would share it with their children. And her extended list of ideal readers included children, adolescents, and adults of both sexes, all ages, and all classes. Vust never discussed the Dreyfus affair directly in the pages of Pour nos enfants, but she found many other ways to suggest the journal's Dreyfusard sympathies and enlist its readers on the Dreyfusard side of the affair. Shortly after Desjardins published his Maxims for the Current Crisis in the Union Bulletin in February 1899, for example, Vust enclosed copies of the pamphlet version of the Maxims and added some introductory information about the Union itself when she distributed Pour nos enfants in March. In the note to young readers that she attached to these materials, she encouraged children to pass the inserts along to anyone who might be interested. She explained, "It is possible that the youngest among you may not understand these publications perfectly yet. We would ask you thus to give them to your parents or your teachers and tell them that the union offers its friends as many of these sheets as they can usefully distribute." One of the most intriguing contributions that Vust included in Pour nos enfants during the period of the Dreyfus affair was Action Française, plural, a series of columns that ran from 1899 onwards to invite readers to think about the question of what should count as an exemplary French action. As the series ran anonymously, it is difficult to know who came up with the idea, collected the readers' responses, and wrote up the results. Although the column's consistent use of the first-person plural would suggest that the series was the result of Vust's own editorial work, for example, some of the other internal evidence suggests someone from a different family background than her own. Whether or not Vust initiated the series herself, however, she clearly took responsibility for its political message by including its installments in her pedagogical journal. Pour nos enfants never explicitly presented Action Française plural as a response to the work of the anti-Dreyfusard Action Française singular. But the column's definitions and discussions took a tone that could easily have encouraged readers to reject Peugeot and Vaugeois's exclusive approach to French national identity in favor of a definition that was more open and accepting. In the first column, for example, the author urged readers to seek the words of the French word français in the associated French words for frank, frankness, free city, and enfranchisement. The second column stressed the importance of making a distinction between positive patriotism and negative chauvinism, identified patriotism with inclusiveness by stressing, quote, the love of our country does not imply in any way the mistrust of strangers, and connected the love of France both to love of the Republic and to willingness to act in the Republic's defense. The stories that Pour Nos Enfants highlighted from readers' responses gave concrete examples of the ideal Republican nationalism that Wüst and the Union for Moral Action consistently supported for adults and children alike. The first entry, for example, focused on the story of an anonymous blacksmith of Orme, who refused to leave his work at the forge to watch Louis Napoleon marching through France on his way to the coup d'etat of 1851. If only others had followed this blacksmith's admirable French example, the column's author argued, the Second Republic would not have fallen to the Second Empire, the Franco-Prussian War would never have taken place, and France would not have been defeated by Germany. The column concluded, quote, "It is not enough to inhabit the French Republic. If it is going to last, we must be French and Republicans. We must be careful to act as rational and free citizens." French and Republican, rational and free. The column never mentions the Dreyfus affair, but this is definitely the language of the Dreyfusard side. And you will hear more about that language in Eric Brandom's paper, also on our panel. So to conclude, Paul Desjardins and Emma Wüst both participated in the Union for Moral Action that Desjardins founded in 1892. They both founded and edited important union publications. They both took advantage of their existing professional networks when they used their monthly journals to publish and distribute articles that would encourage their readers to adopt a series of pro-Dreyfusard political positions and Republican political ideals. While Desjardins' bulletin went out only to the adult members of the union itself, Wüst's Pour Nos Enfants sought to spread the union's message beyond the ranks of its existing membership by reaching into the French school system, targeting parents, teachers, boys, girls, young men, and young women. Where Desjardins, the Union for Moral Action, and even the Action Française singular, all figure prominently in Jacques Julliard and Michel Vinocq's canonical dictionary of French intellectuals, however, Emma Wüst, Pour Nos Enfants, and the Action Française plural are nowhere to be found. When I began this project, I hoped that I would be able to reclaim women like Emma Wüst and identify them as intellectuals in their own right. As I have continued my comparisons between Desjardins and Wüst's lives and work, however, I have started to wonder about the merits of this approach for the men and women of the Union. Paul Desjardins enjoyed a national reputation as a writer for the Revue Bleue, the Journal des Débats, and the Figaro. He taught elite boys in a succession of positions at the Collège Stanislas, the Lycée Condorcet, and the Lycée Michelet. He would go on to make a brilliant career on the faculties of the Third Republic's influential new École Normale Supérieure at Saint-Cloud for boys and Sèvres for girls, or young men and young women, I should say more properly, who would teach boys and girls. He put his reputation on the line when he signed his name to one of the many public petitions that urged the French government to revisit Dreyfus' case and revise its guilty verdict, and he wrote a very moving letter to Dreyfus in jail, telling him how sorry he was that he had ever doubted his innocence at the outset of the affair. Emma Wüst, by contrast, built a reputation as a regional writer on Alsace, organized French lessons for working-class girls under German occupation in the city of Strasbourg, and directed much of her life's work to this local endeavor alone. While her patriotic Protestant philanthropic initiative certainly combines with her work in Pour Nos Enfants to suggest the depth of her dedication to the French Republican pedagogical project, I have not so far been able to find her name on any of the many national petitions that circulated at the time of the Dreyfus affair. I do not know whether she wrote Action Française plural herself, and I have not seen her name in correspondence with Dreyfus himself. Comparing and contrasting Desjardins and Wüst's lives, locations, audiences, influence, and public political positions can go a long way towards explaining why Desjardins has an entry in Julliard and Vinocq's dictionary, while Wüst does not. Whether or not we define Wüst herself as an intellectual, however, I still believe that studying her example and continuing her work with Paul Desjardins, the Union for Moral Action, considering it, can teach us quite a few new things about Republican intellectual life and political culture before, during, and after the Dreyfus Affair. So let me conclude by mentioning just three. First of all, Desjardins' decision to distribute the Maxims to the readers of the Union's bulletin, Union members' desire to find a larger audience for this work by reprinting it as a pamphlet, and Wüst's agreement to include the Maxims in Pour nos enfants all work together to underscore the importance of the publicity networks that surround any individual intellectual's actions. Desjardins' professional position at the center of the French educational establishment in and around Paris may have been more visible and more influential than Wüst's volunteer position on the margins of French culture and society in German-occupied Alsace, but Desjardins' Maxims found a larger audience than his Union's bulletin could command on its own, largely because Wüst had already reached beyond the borders of Alsace to develop a broader French national network for Pour nos enfants. Even if we agree with Vinocq that Desjardins is the real intellectual hero then, we have to recognize that the male academic could not have accomplished his political project without the female philanthropist. Second, then, Wüst's decision to extend the reach and complement the work of the Union's bulletin by founding and distributing Pour nos enfants not only underscores the importance of everything we already know about the French Republican interest in new pedagogical projects, but it also shows us how women networked to take advantage of the new professional opportunities that were opening up for them in the French public school system, and how they complemented official textbooks with unofficial sources on other subjects. In addition to distributing Desjardins Maxims and collecting readers' examples of emancipatory French actions, for example, Pour nos enfants took political positions on French national and international affairs when it complemented short stories, poems, puzzles, pedagogical suggestions, and potential classroom activities with special issues, serious articles, and serial novels on topics as various as the rights of man, religious toleration, the Boer War, the Finnish fight for independence, and the importance of maintaining connections between French and Alsatian families. Third, and finally for now, looking at the case of Wüst and Pour nos enfants underscores the complexity of the relationship between regional and national identity in the debates over the Dreyfus Affair. Ruth Harris has recently argued that the Dreyfus Affair is unimaginable without what she calls the ubiquitous involvement of Alsatians on both sides of the struggle. The Union for Moral Action included many French Alsatians who had responded to German occupation by moving to Paris. But the case of Emma Wüst is especially interesting because she maintained her contact with Paris while remaining in Alsace. In this context, her criticism of the Second Empire takes on a special edge because it was the empire that surrendered Alsace and Lorraine. Her support of the French Republic takes on a special significance because it indicates her loyalty to the French nation. Her decision to offer French language lessons for the working class girls of Strasbourg takes on a new meaning, not only as a Protestant philanthropic initiative, but as a patriotic French Republican project. In 1907, the French government rewarded Paul Desjardins for his faculty service at the École Normale Supérieure de Sèvres and his publication of major works on classic French authors and artists by awarding him the title of Chevalier of the Legion of Honor. Wüst was not eligible for such an honor until Alsace returned to French administration after the First World War, but in 1919, the French government rewarded her work with Girls in Strasbourg and her publication of novels on local Alsatian life by naming her a Chevalier of the Legion of Honor as well. The Third Republic honored both Desjardins and Wüst during their lifetimes, and we should remember them both in our histories of their republic. Thank you.